Good afternoon. Welcome, everybody. Feels a little bit like the first day of school, so it's good to have you all back. This is the Education Finance Committee, and we'll go ahead and call our meeting to order. Before we start with our business for the day, I do have some minutes to approve from hearings that we had during the interim period between last session and now. So in your packets, you should have minutes from the November 5th, the November 9th, and the February 17th committee meeting. And I do... No, well, we have to change the year. I think we need to change the year on the February 17th. But we'll make that correction to 2016. But other than that, I'll just go in order. A motion to approve the November 5th, 2015 meeting minutes. Representative Detmer?
I so move.
Thank you. And any comments or questions? If not, all in favor of adopting the November 5th, 2015 minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Minutes are adopted. Thank you. All right. For November 9th, 2015. That was when we were in Albert Lea, I believe. Representative Bennett?
Madam Chair, I so move.
Thank you. Any questions or comments? Seeing none, all in favor of adopting the minutes from November 9th, 2015, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Yes. And then the February 17th, 2016 minutes, as corrected, noting we'll put the proper year in there. Can I have a motion to approve those minutes? Thank you, Jerry. Representative Newton. I'm out of practice here. We'll get back into the swing. So Representative Newton moves approval of the minutes from February 17th. Any questions? Comments? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Thank you. Minutes approved. Housekeeping done. And with that, today we are here to talk about the Office of Legislative Auditor's report on teacher licensure. And I would call our testifiers up. We're very pleased to have Mr. Nobles and Ms. Randall with us. All right, welcome. And I see you've got a presentation for us, and I know we have them in our packets, and they'll be shown on the screens as well. But welcome, and if you will both just introduce yourselves for the record, and please provide your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jim Nobles. I'm the legislative auditor, and we really appreciate this opportunity to be with you. And, Madam Chair, if I could just say what I said to you, to the other members, so they know if I have to leave early, they will know I'm not leaving angry. I just have to go over to the Senate. Now, that may make you angry that I would go to the Senate and not stay with you, but I have to make a presentation over there. So, again, Madam Chair, thank you very much. The state of Minnesota licenses and regulates a lot of occupations, over 200. Nurses, accountants, psychologists, insurance agents, electricians, barbers, and the list goes on and on. But we're here to talk about the state's licensure of teachers. And we are discussing this topic today because you ask us to do this evaluation, and I think you ask us to do this evaluation because there is a lot of legislative and public concern about how the state licenses teachers. And I think that concern and heightened level of concern in recent years really is based in two things. One of them, frankly, a very good thing, and that is that teachers are so very important to us in this state. Teachers are, in fact, vitally important to the state being able to achieve one of its most important policy objectives and one of its most important constitutional responsibilities. The second reason I think we were asked to do this evaluation is a less happy situation, and that is, as I said, there's just a lot of controversy. In fact, there's a lot of frustration among a lot of different people about the state's licensure of teachers, and for a lot of different reasons. And so we, in our report, join in that frustration and criticism and try to explain the origins of it. And it has many different parts and pieces. We know that there are many who believe that the Board of Teaching is really at the center of the problem. And we certainly fault the board for some of the problems that exist. But we also think that there is some blame to go around to a lot of different people and institutions who are involved. And we think that a lot of the problems really start in the statutes, in the laws. And, you know, the job you do in writing laws is not easy. And I've worked here at this institution and started my job here at the House of Representatives many, many years ago. And I know it's not always easy to exactly draft what you intend, and especially when you're working in sometimes a very pressured and time-sensitive environment. And so the laws have been put together over many years, and there are a lot of different patches and band-aids that have been put on those laws, and so they end up being very complex, sometimes even confusing and contradictory. And so we think it's time to step back and do a major overhaul of the teacher licensure law. We also think that it's time to think about the governance structure. And again, that's a matter of what you've created in law. And as you know, you have both the Department of Education and the Board of Teaching responsible for teaching teacher licensure. And we think from the research we've done, the people we've talked to, both inside those organizations and constituents outside, many of your constituents have told us that that governance arrangement is confusing and sometimes hard to really know who's in charge of what. So we recommend an overhaul of that as well. So, Madam Chair, I'd like to now turn over the presentation to Judy Randall, who is the manager of this evaluation, to give you more details about what we found and what we recommend. And again, thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Nobles. And before we turn it over to Ms. Randall, I just want to ask you a question in case you may have to leave. And just if you could provide any insight to the committee. Obviously, you've done a number of audits over the years and provided us with, in the legislature, a lot of valuable information. Just wondering if you've encountered a situation sort of like this before, where you've got two entities both with some kind of responsibility over an important task, but it gets confused. And then secondly, I mean, I've been reflecting on the report, and I was at the hearing when you rolled out the report and that, and wondering, because we've had this set up in education for some time with the Board of Teaching and then the licensure division. And obviously, we've licensed teachers for a long time in the state of Minnesota. And I guess I'm just wondering, it seems to me that the breakdown seems to have occurred more recently, or is that it's just sort of coming to light now that these problems have always been there? Or is there something that's occurred more recently that's making the problems more pronounced to where we're at the point we are today?
Well, Madam Chair, on the last point, I think it is coming to light, maybe more than it has in the past. You're very aware, as other members are, that there's a lawsuit. And there have been a lot of meetings by various legislative committees that have heard from people who are very frustrated, for one reason or another, by the laws, complexities, and confusion, and the governance structure. So, you know, I think, Madam Chair, that the systems that we set up for licensure are never perfect, and there are always some people who have an issue. And so, you know, I think this probably has lingered along, and frankly, I think some of what has happened in the past has been a response to some of the problems that have been brought to you, and so you've tried to address that specific problem that was brought to you with a specific piece of legislation. And I think what we are saying now is that maybe a more comprehensive look at the entire body of the law, and really to kind of freshly think too about the different kinds of licensure that you want in the law and who to be in charge of that. So I think that there's a combination of things that have kind of brought this to the fore. Frankly, asking us to do this evaluation, you know, I think any time that there are problems and issues, legislators, I think, sometimes feel like that it will bring some additional light and maybe some additional information about the source of the problem if you send the evaluators, auditors off, and they put this between two covers and present it to you. And I think that is also what's happening. Your other question was the first one, and you know, if you ever try to answer the second question first, you never remember the first one.
I understand, and I almost forgot what I asked you first. But, just if you've had a similar situation where you've got two entities.
That's an excellent question, Madam Chair, and absolutely, this is not unique. And I won't remember them all, but frankly, in fact, Ms. Randall could probably not give you this presentation, but give you the presentation on the governance of transit in the metropolitan area. And there you have not just two entities, but multiple entities. So, no, this is not a unique situation. We've done a number of evaluations, frankly, because there was confusion over who was in charge of what. And so, this is just another example.
Thank you. And I would say, and Representative Quam, you had a question. Is it to Mr. Nobles before he needs to leave?
Madam Chair, I will be here a little bit longer.
Okay. So. All right. So so why don't we, if it's all right, we'll just proceed with Ms. Randall's testimony on the report, and then unless you have a very specific question for Mr. Nobles, and if he needs to leave, you know, we'll interrupt testimony and get those in. Okay. Very good. Ms. Randall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, for the record, my name is Judy Randall. I'm with the Office of the Legislative Auditor. And as Mr. Noble said, we're pleased to be here today to talk with you about our evaluation on teacher licensure. I would like to acknowledge Katie Reed and Sarah De La Cueva sitting in the audience because they worked really hard on this evaluation with me over the last 9-10 months. let me just dive right into it, and I think Mr. Nobles has already talked about this, but we found significant problems with Minnesota's teacher licensure system really at every level. We found problems in the statutes and the rules in that they use terms that are undefined, use the terms in contradictory or inconsistent ways, and frankly, the laws are just extraordinarily complex. We found problems, as Mr. Noble said, with the governance structure. We have two agencies, the Department of Education and the Board of Teaching, that have unclear and overlapping responsibilities. It ends up with diffuse responsibility, which leads to a lack of accountability and a lack of transparency. And then finally, we found problems at the level of implementation, starting from the moment where a prospective teacher goes online to the Department of Education's teacher licensure application website, all the way through to the appeals process that the Board of Teaching has, which does not fully align with law. So, problems really kind of from top to bottom, unfortunately. We do have some major legislative recommendations, and that's what I'll really focus on today. The first one is to clarify the statutes, use terms that are defined and use them consistently. The second is we recommend restructuring the licenses themselves and really recommending kind of an overhaul of the teacher licensure system, in particular considering a tiered licensure system. And then finally, we recommend consolidating all the teacher licensure activities into one state agency. Obviously, I'm going to spend more time talking about each of these as I go through the presentation. I just wanted to kind of give you the highlights and let you know where we're headed. Let me spend, I think, just one slide doing a really broad overview on teacher licensure just to make sure we're kind of all on the same page before I dive back into those findings and recommendations. So as I think you all know, teachers are licensed for a specific subject area and grade level. So you might be licensed to teach secondary level math, or you might be licensed to teach elementary school. Teacher candidates receive a different type of license depending on the extent to which they meet licensure requirements. So if a candidate meets all the licensure requirements outlined in statute and rule, they would get a 5-year full professional license. Well, that's how we refer to it in our report. It's called a couple of different things in statute and rule. But for simplicity, we call it a 5-year professional license. If a candidate doesn't meet all of those requirements in law, there are other types of licenses they could receive, a 1-year license, a temporary limited license, a special permission. There's a lot of different types of licenses or permissions that allow somebody to be in the classroom teaching while they're working towards meeting all the requirements. I did just mention special permissions. This is something that's awarded by the Board of Teaching, and it's for candidates who are not fully licensed for the subject area they're teaching. And then finally, as we've already talked about, the Board of Teaching and the Department of Education both have responsibility in this arena. In general, the Department of Education handles licenses. So an applicant will apply to the Department of Education. Department of Education staff will review the license application. The Department of Education will make the license determination and then either issue the license or issue the denial. The Board of Teaching establishes the standards and rules and policies by which the Department of Education does those licensing activities. And the Board of Teaching also handles the special permission request review and approval process. So that's kind of how they've sorted out their responsibilities in practice. So let me just jump right to the first big finding, which is related to statutes. So you've already heard us talk about the fact that there are unclear statutes. There are places in law, oh, and I have a page reference, if that helps. Page 71 in the report, I believe you have copies of the report, Exhibit 4.2 outlines just some of the terms that are not defined in statute. So for example, statutes will say things like, the Board of Teaching must issue a candidate a license if they meet X, Y, and Z, or the Board of Teaching may issue a candidate a teaching license or a standard license. But those terms aren't defined anywhere, so they've been left up to interpretation of the Department of Education and the Board of Teaching. Does that mean a substitute teaching license? Does that mean a five-year full professional license? What exactly was the legislature's intent there? Additionally, there is one type of license, restricted license, which has two very different meanings outlined in law. So in one case, there's the restricted license that is awarded to a candidate typically who's come from another state. Perhaps they had a 712 Spanish license in Connecticut, and they came here and wanted to teach Spanish. Well, we don't have a 712 Spanish license. We have a K-12 Spanish license. So that candidate may now come here and receive a restricted license, which allows them to teach Spanish in just secondary level. And action taken by the legislature last year now allows people to keep that restricted license indefinitely. Last year, the legislature also established a second type of restricted license, which is for a candidate who has met all of the licensure requirements except for passing the skills exam. And in that case, a restricted license would allow that person to continue teaching in the school district that they had been teaching at while they've been trying to pass the exam and the subject area they've been teaching during that time. But they're restricted to just that school district and that subject area. So you can see one is restricted kind of in the scope of the license. One is restricted more basically in where they can teach. And I know I'm getting puzzled looks and I know it's confusing, but that's frankly a little bit part of the point. Is it's really confusing and there's all sorts of permutations as we go through the different types of licenses. Another kind of concern we had or issue we identified with the statutes is that they change frequently. And again, I'll point you to another page in the report, page 68, Exhibit 4.1, outlines the changes the legislature has made over the last 4 years to the requirements related to the skills exam. And, you know, I understand why you're making the changes. You have people come here and they're having problems with something and, you know, you're trying to fix it, and I think that's good and laudable. I think what happens, though, is that it ends up being a moving target. So you have folks, so let's talk about the skills exam. It used to be that candidates who wanted to be a teacher had to pass the skills exam. Okay. And then it was hard to pass the skills exam, so then people had 2 or 3 years to pass the skills exam. And then the legislature said, okay, now let's have the ACT and SAT also count as qualifying skills exam. And then the next year the legislature said, well, let's not name the SAT and the ACT in law, let's have the board identify the licensure exams that would qualify, and people will have 4 years to pass it. Again, all trying to help people through a very complicated system, but in the end it makes it complicated also. Additionally, there have been multiple changes to the requirements for the teacher preparation programs that are in Minnesota colleges and universities. So the legislature has added more requirements that those programs must provide to candidates who are going through the training here. So having coursework on reading strategies and technology strategies and working with diverse learners. Again, all good things. I don't think anyone would say those are bad things, but you know, the end result is that it's difficult for the candidates to know what's required, and frankly it's difficult for the licensing specialists in the Department of Education to know what's required to get a teaching license. The last point related to the statutes I want to touch on is that we now have two different sets of licensure standards depending on where a candidate was prepared, whether they were prepared in a Minnesota preparation program or a preparation program in another state. So I know that last session and prior, you heard a lot of testimony from candidates who were trained in programs out of state, but a lot of problems getting a license here. And in part, that was related to language and law that said a candidate trained out of state had to demonstrate that their training was essentially equivalent to training preparation in state. Well, essentially equivalent was never defined either in statute or in rule, and it became a pretty significant barrier for people to get over, to meet, or to demonstrate that they were having training that was essentially equivalent. So the legislature last year removed that requirement and made some other changes to the law. But now what has resulted is that there are two different sets of the standards, and we would say that the standards for candidates trained and licensed elsewhere are now lower to receive a Minnesota teaching license than for candidates trained in a Minnesota program. And I'll just highlight two. This is on page 33 in the report, if that's easier for you to see, but it's not bolded in red in the report. So I'll just kind of talk about the first two rows here where there's the red that shows the differences. So Minnesota candidates are required now in rule to have field-specific teaching methods and to have conducted student teaching of 12 weeks to be qualified for a Minnesota teaching license. Based on legislation that passed last year, candidates trained and licensed out of state either need field-specific teaching methods, which is like a coursework in how to teach, you know, secondary level math. It's field-specific teaching methods. I know I just said the term again, but it's really specific to teaching that specific field. So candidates from out of state either need to have demonstrated that they have field-specific teaching methods or student teaching or have taught for 2 years. But there's no minimum placed on the student teaching requirement in statute. So as part of our work, we sat in on some meetings between the Department of Education and Board of Teaching staff where they would review kind of the trickier license applications to review. And in one of those cases, there was an applicant who had attended a teacher preparation program in Florida, had received a license in Florida, hadn't taught in Florida, and had 5 days of student teaching. And because of the way the statute's constructed, they were required to give that candidate a full professional teaching license. If that candidate had been prepared in a Minnesota training program, that candidate would not be eligible for a Minnesota license unless he or she had 12 weeks of student teaching. The other requirements kind of in that block where there's a bunch of red shows the requirements for a Minnesota teacher preparation program. And a lot of these are in statute, so there's requirements for these programs to provide coursework on reading strategies, technology strategies, supporting English language learners. And of course, there's no similar requirements on training programs out of state, and there's no ability to see if candidates who were trained and licensed elsewhere had that experience that would be required of somebody trained in Minnesota. So we have a number of recommendations related to the teacher licensure statutes. So the first is simply to clarify the statutes, define the terms that are in law, and use the terms consistently across the whole chapter. You know, it's a big chapter. It's 122A, and there are a lot of sections and subdivisions. And I think when changes have been made over the years to try to address the problems you're hearing, it's maybe focused in a certain section or a certain subdivision rather than taking a chapter-wide view. So we would encourage doing that. We also recommend then the legislature considering a tiered licensing approach. And a tiered licensing approach, we think, would provide really clear expectations about what a candidate must do to be licensed in Minnesota. It would allow candidates to be treated consistently, but it would also provide some flexibility for candidates to be able to meet the requirements. Page 77 is kind of a sample tiered licensure system that we laid out. I have some of it up on the slide here, but it's more fully represented on page 77. I want to start the conversation by saying it's a sample and it's a starting place. I think as I said last week when I was talking about this, I know it's really hard for me to stare at a blank piece of paper and start writing these reports. It's a lot easier for me to edit them, and that was kind of the idea behind putting out a sample system. It's a little sample tiered licensure system. It's a little bit of a proof of concept, and maybe it's a starting point to then allow legislators to start tweaking and editing. But I'll walk you through what we established for the tiers. And the idea, too, was to kind of hold everything harmless. So tier one in our system here would require a school district or charter school to request hiring the candidate, and then the candidate to meet one of several different criteria. It could be having a bachelor's degree. It could be passing the licensure exam. It could be other things, all the way down to an emergency request from the school district or charter school. I'm sure there are some people sitting in the room who think this is not a high enough standard for a teacher license. I will just note that this is no lower of a standard than is currently in place with the non-licensed community expert permission that's currently in place and currently awarded by the Board of Teaching. To get a non-licensed community expert permission right now, it simply really requires a school district or charter school request. Tier 3, which is kind of the middle of our sample tiered licensure system, is where we would see kind of the standard entry point for a teacher, somebody who's met all the licensure requirements that are in law, they've done teacher preparation program, they've passed the licensure exams. Tier 3 is where we would see that candidate entering the tiers. And then tiers 4 and 5 provide some career development or professional development opportunities that aren't in the current licensure system. So tier 4 is tier 3 plus some experience, and then tier 5 is additional experience and then national board certification. So it's food for thought, certainly, but we would really encourage the legislature to consider something like this. The idea behind this, too, is that it would wholly replace the current licensure system. It would replace licenses and special permissions and be for everybody, whether you were trained in Minnesota or out of Minnesota. So it would be a lot simpler. I'm going to move on from this point and move to the finding about governance. So on the slide here, it says that lines of responsibility are blurred, which may be a bit of an understatement. As part of our evaluation, we surveyed charter schools and school districts. We surveyed teacher preparation programs, Board of Teaching board members, and we surveyed all teachers or prospective teachers who were applying for their first Minnesota license having been prepared outside of Minnesota. And we heard from more than 700 of those teacher license applicants, which was really excellent information. We also interviewed kind of all the stakeholders, everyone who would talk with us. And across all of those conversations and throughout the surveys, you know, we heard that the structure is confusing, it's frustrating, it's complicated, there's a lot of finger pointing. There's diffuse responsibility. And so in the end, we have a lack of transparency in decision making and really then a lack of accountability. I'll point out kind of back to the statutes here. Statutes state that in many places throughout the statutes, it says the Board of Teaching must issue a license to a candidate if X, Y, or Z. Yet statutes also state that licenses must be issued by the Department of Education. So statutes are pointing to both entities to have responsibility for this. Now in practice, as I think I've already mentioned, what they've done is the Department of Education handles the licensure from receiving the application to reviewing the application to making the licensure determination and issuing the license. And the Board of Teaching is establishing the standards and rules and policies by which the department is doing that. But nonetheless, the statutes don't bring clarity to who's responsible here. We also think statutes are unclear for licensure by portfolio, which I know has been the subject of a lot of discussion in your committee. And then finally, I'll point out that the Board of Teaching, while independent in law, it's established as an independent board, it's not independent in practice because of how the funding is appropriated to it. So the Board of Teaching receives its funding as a rider under the appropriation to the Department of Education. So as a result, the Board of Teaching does not have the independent ability to determine who should provide its financial or administrative services. Instead, it must use the Department of Education because it's not identified as an independent entity in the state's financial system. And that's really an artifact of how it receives its appropriation. So as we were doing this evaluation, it became pretty clear that the governance structure was not working. And so we looked to other models. So we looked to see how does Minnesota license other professions, and we also looked to see how do other states license teachers. And in both of those cases, our current setup with a shared responsibility is a bit of an anomaly. Now, I know, Madam Chair, you kind of asked, does this exist? And sure, it exists, but I think there's many more models of places where, of many more models where this doesn't exist. So first, let me look at how other professions in Minnesota are licensed. And if I could direct your attention to page 91 in the report, we list a number of different professions that are licensed in Minnesota. And you'll see there are three kind of general models. One is the health licensing board model. where there's an independent professional licensing board that has the responsibility for the whole range of the licensing activities, from establishing the standards and policies to managing the licenses and reviewing the license applications, issuing the licenses, et cetera. Then in the middle, you have this hybrid approach that we have with the Board of Teaching. I'll point out the Board of School Administrators, BOSA, is also in this hybrid approach. And then on the other extreme is the professions that are licensed directly by a state agency. I put Department of Commerce up here just because they simply license a lot of these, like real estate agents and insurance brokers that have licenses or certifications that are issued directly by an agency. When we look at how teachers in other states are licensed, and that's outlined on page 90 in the report, you'll see that there's not one model that everybody follows, although the most common model is for the licenses to be issued by the State Department of Education. So again, different than what we have here. So our recommendations related to governance, I'd say the first and most important recommendation under this area is to consolidate teacher licensure activities into one state agency. The current governance structure is not serving anybody well. We walked through the advantages and disadvantages to putting it all into the Board of Teaching or putting it all into the Department of Education. And based on kind of our analysis of the pros and cons, we thought putting it into the Board of Teaching is the best option. And we have two reasons in particular. One, the entity that's ultimately going to be responsible for these teacher licensing activities will also be the entity responsible for disciplining the licensees. And we think it's important that that disciplinary action and the review of the professionals happens by other professionals in the field. Could that happen with an advisory committee under the Department of Education? Sure. But you're not getting to the kind of streamlined who's responsible solution that I think we need. The other issue is that as part of the teacher licensure activities, the Board of Teaching approves teacher preparation programs. And of course, those are housed in colleges and universities. And so moving that responsibility to the Department of Education, which has responsibility, you know, jurisdiction over K-12, it seemed like an awkward fit to us. There's one other option that we don't spend much time at all talking about in the report, but we do mention it, I think, in one sentence, and I'll just say it now here, is the third option we thought of is to create an educator licensing board, for lack of a better name. And basically, it would consolidate all the licensing activities for both the Board of Teaching and the Board of School Administrators, and then you would roll in the licensing division responsibility of the Department of Education. So it's a new board. You would get rid of the Board of Teaching and BOSA. You'd roll in the licensing division function. And then you would establish what that governance structure of that board looked like. So I'll just throw that out there as more food for thought as conversations continue on this topic. Okay, so before I get to that, I do want to just emphasize that our recommendation is to consolidate it somewhere. We feel very strongly that's important. If the legislature decides not to consolidate, we have some other recommendations to make the current situation work a little bit better. And so the first one is, if you keep two agencies involved, if you keep the department and the board involved, clarify in law which agency is responsible for what activities. If there continues to be the two entities involved, then we think the department and the Board of Teaching should have interagency agreements so that everybody's on the same page about who is responsible for what. And then we also recommend that the legislature fund BOT directly with its own appropriation line item so that it can act fully independent and make its own decisions in terms of financial management and administrative services. I'm going to touch briefly on problems with implementation, because certainly there were a number of those as well. So let me start with just kind of the entry point. When a potential teacher wants to, a teacher candidate wants to get a license in Minnesota, they go to the Department of Education's website and go to the online licensure application system. When they go to apply for licenses, not all the licenses that are issued are available to select to apply for. So a candidate may be interested in getting a certain license, may be recommended for a certain license. They may not be able to choose that as an option on the system. Additionally, when they go out to the system and see the different options that are available, the requirements for those license types are not explained. So you might see lifetime substitute license. That sounds great. but you don't know that you have to have retired from teaching and be receiving an annuity to qualify for that license. So simply providing more information to the candidates up front about what's required would be helpful. And then finally, the system is outdated, so applicants can't upload all the information. So they go online, they select the license type they're trying to apply for, they enter in some education information, and then they have to separately mail to the department the transcript and some other information. And then department staff then have to scan that information in. So it's kind of right from the beginning, there are problems in terms of making it just difficult for candidates to apply for teacher licenses. And then there were problems kind of at the back end once a licensing decision has been made. So if a licensing, if the Department of Education decides to deny a license application, we did a review of 100 application files. And in those, we found that for those who were denied, several of those did not receive clear information about why their license application was denied. So they were told they were denied, but they didn't say, we didn't see, you know, enough evidence of you meeting this required math work or you having the reading coursework. And so there was a lot of problems in terms of communicating to those licensure applicants. And then if the candidate is denied the license for which they're applying, they weren't always notified of the right to appeal. And then the appeal process is handled by the Board of Teaching. So the Department of Education is making the licensure decisions, and then appeals are handled through the Board of Teaching. In rule, the Board of Teaching has an appeal process where within 30 days you have to submit a written request to appeal the decision. What happens in practice is you have 30 days to submit your appeal. The licensure committee on the Board of Teaching then reviews your application, makes a decision, lets you know. If they still have decided to deny it, you then have to submit a second written request to appeal for the case to continue to a contested case hearing. So we have a number of recommendations in the back of the report to the board and the department. Just a couple that I'll highlight here. The department should update its application system. We think both the board and the department should post really clear and complete information about what's required for the different license types. When the department denies an applicant a license, we think they should be really clear about why the license application was insufficient and what the candidate could do to obtain the license they desire. And then we think the board should align its appeals process so that it's consistent with the law. Madam Chair, I feel like I went quickly, but hopefully now there's time for questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Randall and Mr. Nobles. Representative Kwok.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Nobles, looking at the report and seeing stuff, because of the way the legislature adds on Band-Aids and so it's like an old farmhouse, you keep adding additions, and has that compounded to the point of what it's been a fertile ground and right for allowing these problems and issues? And if that is true, then should we look at sometime in the future, you know, tearing it down, basically doing a reconstruction for consistency and understandability and transparency? And so if you could just touch on those two points.
Madam Chair, Representative Kwom, I think your analogy is a very good one. And I think that's really what needs to be done. You know, again, I just referenced the fact that, you know, I've been here a long time, seen a lot of laws develop over time. And and again, kind of in reference to the chair's question, it isn't uncommon that, you know, you have a problem or several addressed in one legislative session, you address that problem in one section or subdivision, and often don't have the opportunity and time to step back and look at the whole chapter of a law and how it fits together. And that is what I think needs to be done. And it isn't just a technical recodification, because I think as words come up, there are going to be people affected by what word you choose. And so it is going to be a complicated, difficult process for you to go through. Frankly, we don't think this is something that can be accomplished fully in this legislative session. You probably need to hire a contractor, tear that old building down, get an architect to design a new structure, and start building anew. And as you build anew, I think there are going to be a lot of policy questions, too. And Ms. Randall has referred to them. Who do you want to govern this thing? Who do you want to have on that board? I think if you start fresh, I think you'll leave a lot of the baggage behind, have a clean sheet of paper, and probably build a better structure. So I like your analogy.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman, and thank you for that feedback. Along those lines, to get the process started, the discussion, I have drafted two of the recommendations in bill form to facilitate that activity. One would be the tiered licensure, and the other would be looking at bringing all the academic licensure activity into an entity, whether it's the superintendent, the principal, or teacher. If we have that consistency and they interact with higher ed, with districts and the other groups, but have all that brought into an independent entity, and they could more, at least they'd be all talking with amongst themselves and save some confusion. So, if someone else wants to help me in this endeavor, but I think if we start now, we might get it done. I don't think we can build it in the 10-week or 9-week period we've got, but just food for thought.
Thank you, Representative Quam, and I'm sure we'll probably hear a number of suggestions about how we maybe proceed from receiving and sort of digesting the report today. Representative Dabney, I have you next on the list.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and great work. I really appreciate the effort put into this. I think you, as I'm reading it, hit the nail on the head. The problem isn't so much with the Board of Teaching. The problem isn't so much with the Department of Education. The problem is here. The legislature created this mess and then left it to, you know, well-meaning people in those two entities to try to make something of the sausage ingredients we gave them. I'm looking, however, at page 91, exhibit 5.3 on your table, identifying the three different ways that the state licenses professions. And I'm focused in on what I perceive as a contrast between professions licensed by state agencies and the Independent Professional Licensing Board. And as I look at the type of professions in each, it strikes me that those professions licensed by state agencies are those professions where we have a different regulatory relationship than we do with those Independent Professional Licensing Board licenses. And having served on Commerce off and on over the years, we not only license insurance agents, but we regulate and limit some of their activities, and I could go down the list. That was just one. Am I right in observing that there's not only a difference in the way that these different professions are licensed, but the regulatory relationship the state has to these is at least part of the explanation for the difference?
Mr. Noble?
Madam Chair, Representative Dabney, I think that's accurate. Each one of these choices has a history, and it's always, you know, legislative history is sometimes not always clear. But I think you're right that, I mean, if you pick out, for example, that insurance agents are licensed under the Department of Commerce, well, the Department of Commerce also regulates insurance. And so we have other food brokers, I assume, audiologists, possibly under the Department of Health. But so there are these relationships. But since you raised the issue of kind of who would be the best, and Ms. Randall's already covered that really well, I thought, but one thing I think we should just keep in mind, this is a really, really important profession. All of these are to individuals, but it seems to me teaching, as I said before, comes to the heart of who we are as a state and who you are as a legislature. You do a lot of things and have a lot of responsibilities, but building the public education system certainly is one of the, if not the most important. And probably the most important thing in that system is the teacher. And so, you know, it seems to me, given that it deserves an organization that really gives it focus. and attention every day. And putting it in the Department of Education is one option. And I think you see over on the other page that that is the way a lot of states do it. My only concern about that would be the Department of Education has 15 really important responsibilities. And where would regulating teachers be in that? If you have a board of educational licensure, and let's maybe take the third option and say it won't be the Board of Teaching, it'll be some new entity. But if it is a new entity, I think it should really have a focus on the elements that are key to educational success. You know, the teacher, the administrative structure, and that's all they do and think about every day.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be brief. Mr. Nobles, thank you. The passion and the recognition you gave to teaching. Of course, the state constitution requires a uniform system of public schools. Now, obviously, I will not say that the difference between a 5-day student teaching experience and a 12-week student teaching experience goes to the heart of that constitutional provision, but it certainly is a dramatic contrast. And does go to the value and importance, the central importance of teaching in a democracy, which is really the root of that constitutional provision that you raise. So thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, auditors, all. You indicated this was like at least a 10-month project, and it was our work that enabled you to receive the project and get the number of votes that was necessary to present it. And I think it's a document that we can work off of and carry on the discussions that you are suggesting that we carry on, and it gives us a little bit more order, and I'm hopeful that the finance chair and the education policy and innovation chair intends to proceed with those discussions so that we can make good use of the discussions that take place, and that we can work out some of these recommendations. And I appreciate that just that these issues that are disturbing our constituents and people coming into the state now has a little bit of organization and order. And I think that takes us a giant step forward. And if in the next appropriation round we can get a fair raise in the funding that would enable the Board of Teaching to have more outreach to get more teachers' input, I think we will all benefit. Madam Chair, citizen lobbyist Heller has asked me to ask the auditor, and I passed on the message to the assistant auditors that are here to speak with citizen lobbyist Heller. But it is a concern that has come before us in other committees. We have a document here by your agency that, and what other form is the document available according to Section 16E statute? And if your assistants can get back to Mr. Heller on that, and then to all of us to tell us how this is organized. We can help spread the word on how this document can be received by all people with all abilities. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. And I don't know, Mr. Nobles or Ms. Randall, if you care to comment on that, but Mr. Heller has been a frequent testifier at this committee and probably others, too, on, you know, accessibility of materials for the print disabled. And I hope I'm capturing this his issue correctly. Would you have any comment on that?
Madam Chair, yes, we are aware of his concerns. We appreciate his concerns. We've tried to be accommodating his concerns. We've met with him a number of times and will continue to. You know, I would say, yes, we produce a written product. And sometimes, as we demonstrated here, it's a lengthy report and a complicated report. It is also posted on our website. And we try to do all the things that we can to accommodate people with various kinds of situations and disabilities, whether they're blind or deaf or have other disabilities that might impede them from being able to utilize our reports. So we will continue to work with Mr. Heller and really appreciate the fact that he cares about our reports, frankly.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Representative Murphy, any additional questions? All right, thank you. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, members, we have amended this section of law 15 times since 1959. So my question of the auditor, especially Ms. Randall, did you find in your interviews that most of the problems have occurred among those trying to apply who were educated in other states or licensed in other states? Because this problem seems to have arisen recently when we've had movement among industries and we've had outsiders coming in. I know I get a number of emails about candidates seeking licensure, because I don't think we heard about this issue much before the last 5 years. When teacher shortage started to show itself in our state.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Erickson. I do think more of the problems come with candidates who are not trained in a Minnesota teacher preparation program, who've kind of come through, you know, I'm hesitant to say the traditional pathway, but just kind of the traditional pathway. 60% or so of teachers who are licensed in recent years come through Minnesota teacher preparation programs. And there have been some issues with candidates who come through that pathway. I mean, I saw it when I was doing my work, candidates who have a hard time passing the licensure mm-hmm. skills exam. And then if the requirements for teacher preparation programs and training change during the time they're trying to pass the exam, then they apply for licensure and they don't meet current requirements, and so they get sent back. So there's a little bit of problems generated by changing requirements, but I would agree that I think more of the issues come up with candidates who have been trained in other states who haven't fit kind of the traditional mold. And I think you heard that a lot in previous years, especially with the language around having that essentially equivalent training. And so, you know, understandably, the legislature said, well, let's remove that because that seems to be a barrier. But I think now that's just created some different problems. But I do think, Representative Erickson, most of the issues are related to candidates coming from out of state.
Thank you, Ms. Randall. And so when you've done these interviews, what have you heard about the process when they use the website? Because that's where I've really heard a lot of consternation coming from these candidates. And you alluded to it in your presentation. But is there a need for updating the website? Is there not enough clues? Because I found that to be true. Mm-hmm. Would you comment on that further than you did during your presentation?
Sure. Ms. Randall.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, yes, they need to update the website. I think the information on the website is incomplete. So first of all, you can't apply for all license types that currently exist. Mm-hmm. When you go to the application website, it doesn't tell you what you need to qualify for each of the license types. So candidates really have to kind of hunt around to get information. And I know we heard from, you know, we we surveyed all these teachers and heard from more than 700 of them, and we heard stories about folks calling the department and then getting sent to the board for answers and then sent back to the department. So I think there's a real desire for some clear information that's not available. I think also the website is geared towards folks who have gone through a traditional path. I mean, I went and applied. You know, I went online. I think my whole team went on and tried to apply. I mean, I stopped at some point because I don't have a teacher preparation training. But, you know, it asks for, you know, the school you went to. It asks for some very basic information, but it asks for, you know, at what school did you get your teacher preparation training? Well, if you have your teacher preparation training through maybe an alternative mechanism, not through a traditional teacher preparation program, there may not be opportunities for you to explain that in the way the online application system is structured now. So, it needs to be updated. I mean, I think updated at the least. I would encourage really an overhaul. But I guess I would say, well, maybe they should wait to see if changes happen here before they do that. But ideally, you would have the application system fully reflect the options available depending on what the legislature decides.
So, Madam Chair, Ms. Randall, when you looked at other licensures, processes, do they offer websites and do they facilitate the applicants in a different form, maybe more efficiently than this process did?
Ms. Randall.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, to be honest with you, we did not dig too deeply into how a nurse is licensed, for example. Mm-hmm. I just knew that this system wasn't working well.
Thank you.
Representative Erickson. All right. Representative Crescia.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Ms. Randall. On page 90, I'm looking at Exhibit 5.2, and I just want to ask a question on the other side of the spectrum, which is, in your estimation, would it be possible that Minnesota could move to a no-standards board state and allow the colleges to handle the licensing and still uphold the integrity of what we're doing? It seems to me by disseminating this down to the colleges and then have an oversight committee, the situation we have now where you might be having a lawsuit against the board, that could be directed towards a college if they're not meeting the certain criteria. I'm just wondering if you viewed that at all, and being from Nebraska and know the high quality of people that come out of there, I got to believe this works.
Ms. Randall.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Crescia. Well, on page 90, the No Standards Board mostly means that those states license their teachers through their State Department of Education. So it's not that there's no centralized state entity doing it. It's just it's not a board. It's the Department of Education. I'm trying to think through my comments. I think there's an important role here for a state entity, certainly in terms of the entity that licenses the profession is also the entity that will discipline the profession. And there's a teacher code of ethics, and if a teacher is found to violate that or have an allegation of violating that, that needs to be reviewed by an entity. And so I think that would be hard to be done by a college or a university. I see that as more of a state oversight function, frankly. And so in terms of rolling the whole licensure function out to the colleges and universities, I just don't know if that would take care of the responsibilities of all the teacher licensure activities that exist.
Representative Crescia.
And thank you, and that helps. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the clarification. So, in other words, I'm assuming they get through the colleges and they just complete their packet, they submit it, and it's mainly a checkoff item, though. But I understand the oversight and discipline action. Is that correct? Is my assumption right on?
Madam Chair, Representative Crescia. So, the way it works currently, if a candidate goes to a Minnesota teacher preparation program, they complete the coursework there. They then have to pass the licensure exams, and then once that is done, there's a certifying officer at the college or university that basically signs off on a form and says, this candidate has met all of our requirements, we certify that they've met all the requirements, Department of Education, this person's good to go. Then the Department of Education receives that person's application, they receive that form, they may then look at the classes the candidate took to make sure they were what was approved for that institution that met the Minnesota standards outlined in statute and rule, and then they issue the license. So there is kind of a checkpoint that the college and university provides to say, yep, this person has completed the preparation that that we require and that board you've approved as satisfying the Minnesota requirements for teacher preparation. But it's not the only check. And in fact, I was in a meeting over the summer where somebody had come through with that, and it turns out the candidate had not met current standards. This is that example of somebody who didn't pass the licensure exam right away, took several years to pass the licensure exam. In the meantime, the requirements for the teacher preparation program had shifted. And so then when the person came to apply, they actually didn't meet the requirements, even though the certifying officer at the university had said, yep, this person's good to go. So just make everything a lot more complicated. I don't know.
And thank you. And one quick follow-up to that. So I know in Nebraska that they actually have to take the licensure exam before they're admitted into the college. Mm-hmm. So I don't know that changed anything, but it does clarify. And now that I understand that process, that's very helpful. So thank you.
Representative Newton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Randall, thank you. Thank you for the report. This is very nice. I want to go back to Representative Quam's original farmhouse. What came first? Did we have the Board of Teachings created simultaneously with, or was it, you know, as part of the Department of Education? Do we know that? Was it something that was added on, or was the role or the functions of the portion of the board of these Department of Education does, has that been added on?
Ms. Randall.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Newton. So on the first page of Chapter 5, page 81, there's a little bit of history, very brief, on the Board of Teaching. And so the Board of Teaching was first established as this Teaching Practices Commission in 67. And kind of over time, the changes, what became the Board of Teaching gained responsibilities. And then when the Board of Education was abolished, all of those responsibilities were then just rolled to the Department of Education. And some of those overlapped with the Board of Teaching, and some of those were standalone. And so it was an evolution slowly, I think. The Board of Teaching first was established to kind of help with identifying good teaching practices, started to gain more and more responsibility, but shared responsibility with the Board of Education. And then when the Board of Education was abolished, the remaining responsibilities there were allocated to the Department of Education, and now you've got these two entities involved. And then, you know, as Representative Quam said, and I think as we all know, I mean, I think these changes have just been decades in the making.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Randall. And you actually answered the second part of my question, too, was about the Board of Education. And I have the good fortune of sitting next to Lynn Carlson, you know, with 44 years of institutional knowledge, who you know, brings me up to date all the time. So, you know, and he discusses the Board of Education. So I was wondering if this wasn't a part of the problems as we dissolved the board, mm-hmm. that we, you know, created some monsters in the place. The other thing, and I'd just like to make a general observation, you know, listening to the Board of Teaching talking and before and having this report, is I think that perhaps we in the legislature try to over-control too much. You know, because when the teachers, you know, they're on probation when they go to the schools. And it's up to the schools really to determine whether that individual is a good teacher or not, not a certificate or how many weeks or months they've had in teacher training. And I think we, you know, as we look at this, we should be looking at that as well and giving, you know, the local control people a little more, some of your people, a little more control. Observation only.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And we appreciate all questions and observations. Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and ditto, Representative Newton. Ms. Randall, again, a high-quality report prepared by your office. I have to say, you know, I'm obviously bragging about Minnesota, but I just think that this entity that we have in the legislative auditor, I don't think, you know, there isn't another entity in the other states that surpasses the quality and the depth of your work. So thank you. Two questions. One is, I don't challenge kind of the main supposition here around the design aspects, the current de facto and design that governs teacher licensing in our state, that design itself has created tremendous problems for us. I think that's correct. However, just a quick question, was your office able to do any kind of assertion of impact of budgets, appropriations from the legislature relative to the quality and consistency of the myriad of services that we expect in teacher licensing, both with the Department of Education and the Board of Teaching? I know that serving on Representative Marquardt's committee and now on Representative Lewis' committee, we make those decisions about appropriating to the Board of Teaching, and what I'm remembering is it's a pretty small dollar amount for a pretty big job. So anyway, just is there any sense, anything you can give us of a sense of a relationship between levels of resources and the quality that we're seeing coming from, and consistency with our laws that we're seeing coming from the decisions of the Department of Education and the Board of Teaching?
Ms. Randall.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Mariani. It's a great question, and we didn't dive into it, and I'll tell you why. I think the system, the structure is clearly not operating at its most efficiently right now. And so, you know, we could look to see if the funding lined up with the responsibilities now, but I don't know that that means it wouldn't. If we decided that it wasn't adequate funding now for the current responsibilities, I don't know that that means once the structure was aligned and making sense, it wouldn't be adequate resources, if that makes sense. And so I didn't think, we didn't feel like we were in a position to evaluate that because we thought things weren't working well yet. So the first step was to get it working well, and then I think you could figure out what type of resources they need. Both the licensing division and the Board of Teaching have a lot of responsibility and a lot of different responsibilities. You know, the Board of Teaching has 6 staff people. The licensing division has 13, and they're not all full-time. I mean, there's not a lot of people doing this work. So, you know, a potential for more resources, possibly. But I think the first step is to get it working well, get a structure where it can be successful, and then figuring out the resources needed.
Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think that's right. I think that throwing more money or appropriating more, you know, however you want to call it, I don't think gets us at the bottom line issue here. Having said that, I think that there are some real legitimate issues, both in the licensing and the Board of Teaching, and relative to the appropriations that they get. Especially given, historic kind of upswing of attention that we've directed to both of those entities because of, you know, our current, you know, waves of national and state reform around K-12. Another quick question, Madam Chair, and Ms. Randall, on page and the list of recommendations. You address the licensure denial letters and recommend that they should specifically state the deficiencies, identify the applicant's preparation in your report. You share examples of, you know, what that probably should look like and examples of what it has looked like and it maybe shouldn't look like that. I think that this speaks to the issue of having the professionals be in the position of sending those messages. It makes intuitive sense to me that if this is your profession, then you can explain it to someone, as opposed to having someone who is not a teacher, not a licensed teacher, not have gone through the process, but it's just, you know, a well-meaning, you know, bureaucrat, and I don't mean that negatively, but, you know, just someone who's, you know, going through the process. And I think the safe thing to do in that case is actually not to say a whole lot because, you know, I may not know a whole lot. Mm-hmm. Lot. All I know is that, you know, these boxes aren't checking off here. So I think that's right. My question is, any thoughts, and I'm sure this is like open-ended, how do we legislate for that? How do we legislate that? Do we have to be really, do we have examples of where we're really prescriptive about that? Or is the approach here that we legislate a different training, scenario, a different, I mean, so I'm kind of wrestling with, you know, I want to be able to depend on our state employees and make good professional judgment without, you know, giving them a long list of how exactly how to do it.
Sure. Mr. Randall, and I'm going to piggyback on Representative Moriarty's question, too, because I think you raise a really important point of you know, obviously the legislature, because our work is and our relationship with our constituents and the people that we represent is, you know, often a very timely thing where we see trends coming to us from our constituencies, from our areas, and so we pass laws, and perhaps it's in rapid, you know, succession, and maybe there sometimes it cross purposes or not as well defined as we would like to try to address problems that we see, and whether or not, you know, that same sentiment is being embraced by, you know, perhaps an entity that's in charge of then taking that legislation and figuring out how to turn it into a licensure process or something. So I think you raise a very good question. Ms. Randall.
Madam Chair, Representative Mariani, members, I think part of it, honestly, is to have all of these responsibilities in one entity. Not to revisit my previous recommendation, but I think if you have the entity that's responsible for establishing the rules and the policies and the standards for licensing also being the entity responsible for issuing the licenses or issuing the denials, then I think you start to get some parallel in thought and approach and understanding of what the standards are and what they mean and then how to translate them. So I think it starts a little bit in streamlining, I know that's kind of a buzzword, but streamlining the responsibility to one entity where they have responsibility for all of it. Because I do think part of the problem is you're hearing, you know, complaints and concerns that are legitimate, but it's not clear where to go with those. You know, and so you say, well, they're not getting clear information in their denial letter. Department of Education, why aren't you writing better denial letters? Well, we're following the Board of Teaching's rules. Okay, well, Board of Teaching, why aren't you writing better rules? Well, we tell them to, but, you know, and you could just kind of go around and around. And so I think it starts with saying, okay, XYZ entity, whatever you want to call it, whoever it is, you're in charge. You know, and here's legislatively what we want to have happen with teacher licensure. This is what's important to us. We're going to be really prescriptive in these areas. We're going to give you general guidelines in these areas. Now go do the licensing, handle it, and you're responsible for all of it, and we're going to hold you accountable. And I think that's how we often do it, you know, with legislature establishing those broad ideals, but then holding the entities accountable and making sure that they are carrying out the legislative intent. And I think the structure we have right now with different entities responsible for different pieces of it and not responsible to each other ends up in what we have today.
All right. Thank you. Representative
Ansels. Thank you, Madam Chair. My first question is the obvious one, which is, should the Board of Teaching be given total, full, and complete responsibility for all matters relating to teacher licensure? Going back to those wonderful days of yesteryear, the demise of the State Board of Education and the rise of the Ching are related. This legislature created it. This legislature diminished the power and control of this omnipotent
Board of Education that consisted of high-powered school board members and superintendents from wealthy schools, and began a movement to replace it with a system that empowered teachers. That's what this was about. And it had merit because for a long time in Minnesota, those teacher preparatory public colleges were actually called teachers' colleges. St. Cloud State Teachers College. And it was that higher ed piece that really and truly made the push for empowering teachers, and those higher ed institutions were at the table in the beginning wrestling with all matters of licensure. What's happened since, and this is 60% of the universe, according to what I heard you say, what's happened since is these higher education institutions have, their mission has been diluted a million times over, and they aren't focused, and their customers aren't teachers to be, and that's the second part of the problem. And therefore we ended up with this hybrid of people in the Department of Education whose mission, in my view, is to provide technical assistance and figure out for local school districts what in the hell we do here so that they can understand what to do next at home. And that really seems incompatible with this idea of licensure. Sometimes history, and I guess I could say, I couldn't have predicted this problem. And the legislature is at fault. The goal of empowering teachers was a good thing and is a good thing. But we dealt with every problem of the day with a legislative solution that was incompatible with the legislative solution that we dealt with 2 years earlier. Enough of that. Are we better off with a standalone professional funded, well managed, coherent entity with partnership from all the stakeholders, not the least of which should be those teacher preparation institutions in Minnesota?
Ms. Randall.
Madam Chair, Representative Ansels, I think we are better off with one entity responsible for all of this. And we, you know, after looking at the pros and cons of where to put it, we landed on putting it in a professional licensing board that's standalone and independent. So the short answer is yes. I think there's nuance to it, you know, in terms of outlining what their responsibilities are, being comfortable with the membership on that governing board, and whether it continues to be merely the Board of Teaching or if it's a larger, you know, educator licensing board. But yes, we think the responsibility needs to be with one entity, and we think it's better for it to be a standalone independent professional licensing board.
Representative Ansels.
This is a topic that's going to be really a big topic for us. It's going to require lots of thought, a lot of time, and I look forward to being a part of it.
Thank you, Representative
Ansels. And you did a good job.
Yes, and I'm Representative Erickson, I know, is asked to be back on the list, and I just wanted to comment, and I'd like her to comment as well, that, you know, I do think that our two committees will be working closely together on this topic, you know, moving into the rest of this session and probably into, you know, next year on this, because, you know, as Representative Erickson commented when the report was released, there's a lot here to think about, and this is too important a topic to rush forward without really being clear about where we want to go and how we want this to be resolved favorably for teachers and the schools and the students that they serve. So I think we're of the same mind in terms of being thoughtful and deliberate about how we take this very important information that has been carefully prepared and what we do with that. So Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And members, today one of the introductions in our new bills will be a legislative study group that would consist of, well, my bill has 8 members, but it could be, you know, something different from that. That would spend the interim really digging down into this report and trying to discover thoughtfully, slowly, and thoroughly what our next step should be. But, Madam Chair, I wanted to ask Ms. Randall a question. So, Ms. Randall, I appreciate Chapter 5, where you've gone over the governance structure and you touched on the Board of Teaching History. You know, and as you know, I served on the board, and I believe Judy Wayne was our executive director for at least 25 years. So when I look at the legislative changes, I see a pretty status quo, because we did innovate, but I see stability occurring. But then when Judy Wayne retired, we had, and I noticed you didn't go over the history of executive directors, but we did really have a collapse in the area of direction, leadership in the Board of Teaching, because we had a lot of interim directors until Karen Ballmer took over in the mid-2000s. We had been without a really stable executive director. So I think, you know, what was happening within the Board of Teaching, not that they didn't have a great membership, because they did, and I think for the most part always have had very good members appointed by the sitting governor, but you still lose that leadership. And then, of course, the board during Karen Ballmer's reign changed the testing, and that, you know, raised a lot of ire, we know, from our legislative debates. The MTLE was created. It reflected somewhat what No Child Left Behind reflected, and that was that we had a gap. We have an achievement gap among teachers being able to pass a test that's more at the college level, the beginning college level, than at the eighth grade level of reading, math, etc. So I think that as we proceed, we're going to have to you know, think carefully about the fact that there was you know, a period of time when there was not leadership. I believe that Ms. Doan came to us from licensing, and you don't, I think, note in here when the Board of Teaching became so involved with the licensing division, or did I miss that? I've been reading this report many times over, but I'm still trying to pick out parts. But I think that in itself has caused confusion too, because in statute it's the Board of Teaching licenses or issues licenses, and then a couple of places we have the licensing division issues, and therein we start to have, I guess, some question that has not complicated me, but has certainly complicated those who've been trying to apply for a license. And I feel really bad about that, because I think we could have many more teachers coming to our classrooms had we probably not had some of that complication. But anyway, those are some of my comments, and of course you'll be presenting in my committee next Tuesday, and so members who serve on policy innovation will have, I'm sure, many more questions then, and so study the report and come prepared, because we do want to take this slowly. I firmly believe we shouldn't jump into major changes, although I would like to know if the board, if you know if the board has made some changes to the website. Do you know that?
Ms. Randall.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, I was looking over at the board.
Yeah, Ms. Doan is here.
Yeah, I think I'll, and I'm looking at Sarah and Katie, my staff. I think the answer is there's been some tweaks.
But perhaps when we have the hearing next Tuesday, Ms. Stone, you would address some of that, because I'd like to know if, you know, there's a better level of understanding on the part of our candidates, so that they're not only applying online and sending in all that information, because they're telling me they have to send a ton. And that's their descriptor, but, you know, that might not be as true anymore.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, I'm sure that's still true, that the application website on the Department of Education's website still requires candidates to submit hard copy information. I know on the Board of Teaching's website there is some additional information regarding licensure requirements, but that information is not fully captured on the Department of Education's website, where the application system is.
Very good. Thank you. We'll be probing some more.
Thank you. All right. I think we have exhausted questions, and I'm going to open it up for public testimony. But if Ms. Randall, if you would stay in case there's any more other questions that come up before we adjourn here at 2:30, I would invite anyone who wishes to testify in the report to come down. And I was alerted that Mr. Crossan, you would like to testify.
Yes, thank you,
Madam Chair. Welcome. Please introduce yourself for the record and offer your testimony.
Yeah, good afternoon, Madam Chair. Members, my name is Joshua Crossan, and I'm with MNCAN. MNCAN is an education advocacy nonprofit that really works to improve public education for all kids, regardless of background, zip code, ethnicity, et cetera. So MNCAN has been working with school leaders and hundreds of teachers on teacher licensure issues, including many covered in the OLA, or the Office of Legislative Auditors report today. And I want to share some reflections on that report. We support a majority of the OLA's recommendations. In particular, we agree that all three major parties have a role in fixing what the OLA has titled our broken system. First, the legislature. The legislature should restructure licensure to ensure consistency and transparency. We support the OLA's proposed tiered system, which would finally create streamlined and consistent pathways to licensure for in-state and out-of-state candidates. It would also create professional ladders, allowing our current teachers the ability to become master teachers and recognized as experts in their field. Second, the Board of Teaching. The Board of Teaching must follow the laws that the legislature passes, such as implementing rules that align with the word and the spirit of the law that authorizes them to do so. And third, when denying candidates their licenses, the Department of Education should clearly and explicitly tell candidates why. As the OLA points out, too often candidates have not been told what is required of them, and have instead been referred to colleges and universities, and we want to prevent that in the future. So it's time to move past this inconsistent approach. We also strongly agree that with the OLA's recommendation that the legislature should consolidate all teacher licensure activities into one state entity. However, we have some concerns about the Board of Teaching being this sole entity. Here in the courtroom and elsewhere, the Board of Teaching consistently points out that they are all an all-volunteer board that meets only once per month, and that is therefore unrealistic to expect them to complete complex tasks and meet deadlines. The board has a capable and competent leader in Executive Aaron Doan, and capable and competent staffers. But still, I worry that the current board is at worst dysfunctional and at best not prepared to manage teacher licensure, a system that is vast and so critical to our students and schools. While board members might claim that they can take on this important responsibility, I believe a neutral observer might come to a different conclusion when watching our part-time volunteer board at work. I welcome all of you to come. Actually, tomorrow the Board of Teaching is having a meeting at 9 a.m. And join me to see our board at work. Furthermore, we often hear frustrations that the board has no oversight or accountability. Even Education Commissioner Casilius wrote a letter to the board asking for more authority and having more oversight over the board. The board, as it is currently structured, does not allow for the accountability it desperately requires. So I'm also worried that an independent agency will also lack that same type of accountability. For all these reasons, we recommend that the teacher licensure be consolidated under the Department of Education, which has rulemaking experience, full-time staff, and more importantly, direct lines of accountability through their commissioner and our governor. So if there are issues in the future, legislators, educators, community members would actually know where to turn. Finally, much has been made about the OLA's suggestion that out-of-state teachers seem to be held at a different standard or set of criteria, that that most importantly, the most important thing that we need to address is leveling the playing field. We agree at MinCAN that all teachers must show they are qualified to be in front of our kids. The 2015 law did not lower standards or remove standards. It simply shifted the responsibility in how we interpret standards from the higher ed institutions to the Board of Teaching, which I think aligns really well with what the OLA has suggested in consolidating where licensure is currently being managed. So with that, MinCAN looks forward to ensuring our licensure laws work for kids and teachers, I welcome any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Crossan. Any questions? Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Crossan, I didn't get it. You're in favor of the consolidation under the Board of Education, but no Board of Teaching then?
Mr. Crossman.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative, we would like to see a consolidation of all licensure duties in one entity, but not in a volunteer agency that is not currently held accountable. So we would like to see that maybe in the Department of Education, or as it's been referenced at the OLA, an agency that is held accountable and is well-funded to manage the tasks of licensure.
Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, I still don't understand you. So an individual would make an application. There would be things that they have to go through and make an application, and then because it's under the Board of Education, or because it's under the Department of Education, that it would become more open and. Accountable?
Yeah.
Mr.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Madam Chair, Representative, what I'm saying is right now we currently have a system where the Department of Education is issuing the licenses and the Board of Teaching is regulating those issuance of licenses and managing the appeals. What I would like to see is that consolidated into one group, and because the Department of Education has rulemaking expertise and has a staff, and that we can build a staff that would allow them to currently manage licensure regulations and provide licenses to teachers.
Representative Murphy?
And then, Madam Chair, where would the teachers go for the teachers that are working out there for advice or further information about recommending changes to the teaching procedure to the Department of Education?
Mr. Crossan.
Madam Chair, Representative, yes, to the Department of Education. Right now we're seeing teachers confused by the process, frankly. Okay. Right now not knowing where to turn, and I think the Department of Education would be a good place to consolidate.
Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, I won't pursue it much longer, and I haven't thought about it for a whole lot, but it would seem to me that the teachers wouldn't have anybody. To communicate with. Everything would be being imposed on teachers at all levels, from above, whether it's the local school boards to the state things and Department of Education. I bet they don't. I don't know. I've never asked. Maybe Madam Chair knows about how many real teachers work at and qualified teachers with licensures work at the Department of Education, but I would almost bet that it's not very many, because the real teachers are out in the classrooms with kids that they love and hug.
Mr. Crossan.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative, I would arguably, with the exception of Executive Director Doan and a few great staffers in the Department of Education and in the Board of Teaching, teachers don't know where to turn currently today. I think that if we were able to consolidate this into an agency, they would finally understand where to turn.
Other questions? And actually, Ms. Randall, I'm going to have you step up because I just had a question for you along this course of discussion. In you know, in your report, you section out how different professional licensures handled in the state of Minnesota across multiple careers and professions and that. So on, if you are a professional licensing board, do most of them operate the way the Board of Teaching does, where it's people in the profession? So if you're a doctor serving on that board, but you serve really in a volunteer capacity to a large extent, maybe some expenses paid, but it's a you know, you meet periodically, but obviously you're out practicing your profession in the meantime. Is that typically how they operate, or are there exceptions to that?
Thank you, Madam Chair. It is typically how they operate. So there's a full-time staff, which is true with the Board of Teaching right now. They have 6 full-time staff. And then the governing board is made up of, you know, a mix, and it depends on the board. I printed out a little bit of information on the health licensing boards to look at their composition. And so, for example, the Behavioral Health and Therapy Board has 13 members. 10 of them are professional, so professions in the field, and 3 are public members. Again, I'm just randomly flipping, but they all have a large number of folks in the profession who are active in their profession, and then they come to board meetings and then have committee meetings, you know, throughout. But that's a typical model for how our licensing boards are structured.
Thank you. And I think Representative Dabney had a follow-up question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Rindle, you identified that the Board of Teaching, if I tracked you correctly, has 6 staff at this time. How many staff does MDE have in their licensing area?
Sure. Ms. Randall.
Madam Chair and Representative Dabney, I will also point you to the information on page 82. It talks about the Board of Teaching, and then page 84, it talks about the Department of Education Licensing Division. So the Licensing Division has 13 staff positions. It includes a director, and not all of those positions are full-time. So I think about 10 full-time positions, 2 part-time in the Department of Ed Licensing Division, and then 6 boards staff in the Board of Teaching.
Thank you, Ms. Randall. I guess, Madam Chair, Mr. Crossan's primary argument is, well, the Board of Teaching doesn't have the capacity to take on all the responsibilities. 6 people couldn't take on the responsibility of 16 FTEs. That's reasonable, but neither does the department have the capacity with 10 FTEs to take on the responsibility of 16 FTEs. Either place that we would consolidate would require additional staffing to either be transferred there or additional revenue to hire new people, or there would have to be a capacity increase either place. I think Representative Murphy hit it on the head in essentially asking, do we think teachers are professionals who can take responsibility for their profession and have one entity where teachers can turn to for both licensure and discipline, or as MNCAN seems to have taken the position, teachers are not professionals and are not capable of that, and we should then instead hand those responsibilities over to the Department of Education. I would warn this committee and those who sit on other committees that once you hand the licensure and discipline of a profession over to a appointed commissioner, next year you will see every commissioner coming to the appropriate committees asking that whatever professional boards exist in their areas be eliminated and those responsibilities given over that department. I would imagine the Department of Health, the commissioner there would love to have authority over nurses and doctors and physician's assistants and chiropractors, and that I know that there has been interest in the Department of Revenue in taking over the authority over property assessors in the state. And I think we could go across the commissioners, and we could go across the professional bodies, and we could find that every commissioner would want that authority. And I think, first of all, we should treat teachers as professionals, and secondly, we should be very wary before we eliminate that professional board. I think the OLA was correct in positing these responsibilities solely in the invigorated Board of Teaching. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. And I think, you know, I I don't know if I would agree completely with your characterization of Mr. Crossan's comments, but I think, you know, what I take away from this is, you know, there's going to be a delicate amount of balance here required in whatever solution we come up with. I do think that teachers in the classroom, in the profession, are probably best positioned to determine, you know, licensure for teachers. I mean, I do think that as a principal is important. But I also, again, as I commented earlier, is that, you know, we are seeing changes in our schools, in the composition of our student population, of shortages in areas and that, and new things that are happening in terms of how teachers being trained, innovative programs there that are affecting what goes on in education. And or do we have a licensing entity, whatever that looks like, that is being duly responsive to some of those changes and that are occurring? And I attribute some of that to some of the problems that have occurred with the legislature trying to respond to some of those things and provide direction to making changes to respond to those changing needs and requirements, and maybe either a system or a process with these two entities that is not able to work that out and move forward, or maybe it's just a resistance to some of those changes. Maybe the profession doesn't feel like some of those changes would be good. So, you know, I don't know where the answer lies in all those things, but I do think those are some important discussions for our committee, for the policy committee, and for, you know, if this working group is put together to wrestle with as we try to figure out what the best way forward is. So, and it is at 2:30. So, and Mr. Heller, I see that you want to come down. Is that correct? Very quickly, and as he's coming down, I failed to mention this at the start of our meeting, but we have two new pages with us for this year's legislative session. So I'll let them stand up and introduce themselves. I met them briefly earlier today, but we are thrilled to have you both. Go ahead, Rachel, if you want to start, just stand, say, give us your name and maybe where you're from.
I'm Rachel Kohler from Ramsey.
Okay. Thank you. Welcome. And M?
M. Anton. I'm from Minneapolis, Santa Fe County. So some of you might recognize me. This is my fourth session here.
Great. Well, we are very happy to have both of you with us for this session, and I know you're going to do great work for the committee, and we appreciate it very much. So, Mr. Heller.
Thank you, Chair, and members of the Education Committee here on Finances. Rick speaking. Rick Heller, unofficially represent the twice exceptional and print disabled on March 10th, 2016. I kind of go between the Ministry of Primary Education, the Board of Teaching, and the legislature because we don't have a Board of Education. I've heard numerous times on the record, you can certainly review them, but the chair is always saying they don't have enough manpower there. Or just staff. Anyhow, the other piece of this I really think I need to express again is that, I'll give you one example about who's going to hold the hot potato. When I approached the Board of Teaching over a year ago, they responded off the record that, and then down here orally, on a twice exceptional, that they were going to leave that up to the Ministry of Department of Education. However, the Ministry of Department of Education puts that in the school districts, just to mix the Kool-Aid for who those kids are, just as well as the people that are print disabled. Really, who's going to own it? You know, that's another responsibility as you look at this important part. Because if there's the Higher Education Act of 2008 added word opportunity and only included two types of lifetime learners, blindness and print disability, when are we going to really take an important look at what those individuals are as it relates to opportunity and outcomes that they all deserve and are needed to have? So hopefully you can work that into this formula. Regarding governance, again, school districts, school board, the Ministry of Education, how's it all going to work together for those types of individuals? Because we currently have a lingual word in a statute called twice exceptional under 120B 15. Thank you again for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you, Mr. Conner. We appreciate it. All right. With that, we're at a little past 2:30, so the committee is adjourned. Thank you, members.